reason that you exist, the reason that you are alive, is for him, right? And what we did is we went to what's called the Westminster Shorter Catechism, where they kind of summarize what the Bible teaches. And they said, the chief end of man, the reason that man exists, is to know God and to enjoy him forever. And the way that that happens is that Jesus works out in your life the same way that he worked in creation, light out of darkness and order out of chaos, and brings us to a place where rather than kind of looking for joy in various places, we're terminating our desire for joy on him. And then last week, we looked at Jesus in the flood. And so if you were here, we talked about the fact God looks at the earth, looks at his creation, and the whole of it was evil. And so he says, I'm going to destroy it. And yet in the midst of that, he provides a means of rescue. So he said, this account of the flood gives us a historical picture of the work of Jesus. That Jesus is the better ark of rescue. He rescues us from destruction to a new creation. And that new creation for new covenant, New Testament believers in Jesus is the kingdom of heaven. So that's where we've been. And then this week, what we're going to do is we're going to jump into the narrative that follows the flood. And Genesis is largely made up of these narratives. And the narrative that follows the flood is the Tower of Babel. And so we're going to jump into that in a minute. But before we do that, we've got to do a little bit of legwork so that we can understand what is going on when we read about the Tower of Babel. And so the way that we're going to set this up is we're going to go all the way back to the first narrative in the book of Genesis with Adam and Eve. And we're going to look at what is the first command that God gave to Adam and Eve. First command. Anybody who's smart? Don't touch the apple. Be fruitful and multiply. The apple is the second one. Be fruitful and multiply. Genesis 1:28, God looks at him, he says, and he blesses them. He says, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. All right, so God looks at Adam and Eve. He's like, hey, have babies, right? Spread out, create culture, fill the earth. I had a professor in Bible college. His name was Wilf, and Wilf always talked in always talks. He's still around in a monotone voice, and he was preaching one week at a chapel, and he was talking about Noah and his sons. He was like, "And Noah got off the ark, and God said to his sons, 'Be fruitful and multiply.'" And these boys sure loved that command. And it was so slow that you're like, "Was that a joke?" It definitely was, and it was funny, okay? So you just got to pay attention and pick it up. But God says to Adam, he's like, be fruitful and multiply, right? And then what happens is, after God wipes everything out at the flood, he starts over with Noah and his sons. What do we see? First command, be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. What we're beginning to see is there's a parallel between God's creation in the garden, and the restored or renewed restart after the flood, right? These two things are the same. God says in both cases, be fruitful and multiply, okay? What's going to be interesting is the parallels don't stop there, right? When God, or when Adam and Eve sin, what happens? God drives them out of the garden. Which direction does God drive Adam and Eve out of the garden? East. When Cain kills Abel, what happens? Right, Genesis 4:14, we read about this. Behold, Cain says, you have driven me today away from the ground, and from your face I'll be hidden. I shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me is going to kill me. Then the Lord said to him, not so. If anyone kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord put a mark on Cain, lest any who found him should attack him. Then Cain went away from the presence of the Lord and settled in the land of Nod. east of the garden. We begin to see two ideas forming in this. We see first that God has commanded man to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And the second idea we see is east is bad. Take that, Toronto. Nobody likes you or your pathetic excuse for a hockey team, right? It's biblical. The author, Moses, is taking pains to show that the east is where people go when they're outside of God's favor. It's just the best. It's biblical, right? With that in mind, we come to the Babel narrative. What happens is after the flood, Noah's sons take this command, be fruitful and multiply seriously, and they have babies. They start spreading out. And so there's people being born, there's families being developed. And what happens in the text is we get a genealogy, right? And I know every time any of us come to a genealogy in the text of Scripture, we get really excited. Right? We're like, yes, here's the good stuff, right? Let me just skim that, okay? We'll get back to the rest of it, right? But this genealogy is actually really important. We're going to come back to it in a few minutes. So just remember, yet Noah and his sons are having kids. We get a genealogy, and then we get the story, the narrative of Babel. And so here's where we're going to pick up. Now, the whole earth had one language and the same words. And as people migrated from the east, right? They found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and bitumen and mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of man had built. And the Lord said, behold, they are one people and they have all one language. And this is only the beginning of what they will do. And nothing that they propose to do will be impossible for them. So come, let us go down and confuse their language so that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord dispersed them from there over the face of all the earth, and they left off building the city. Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord dispersed them over the face of the whole earth. Right, so we have this idea being developed where God says, be fruitful, multiply, fill the face of the earth. And what happens as you follow the text is man says, hey, this looks like a good spot. Let's stop here. We'll make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. Right? So God's saying, hey, be fruitful, multiply, cover the earth. Man says, let's stop here, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. There's a few things we can draw out of this. First is, despite the flood, the heart of man is still wicked. Right, we talked about this last week. We have a tendency in Western thought to think that we're pretty good people. Right? But the reality is the 20th century was the bloodiest century in human history. We talked about that Ravi Zacharias YouTube video that I was watching in my office when I was supposed to be working, right? The 20th century is the bloodiest century in human history. You bring it even a little bit closer, you look at the righteous West, right? 1 in 3 young women have been sexually assaulted or abused. We're not often as good as we like to think we are, and the text is a reminder of that. See, a tendency is that God says one thing and then we do the opposite. And what's really heinous, if I can use that word, what's really heinous here is that what's happening is we use God's good gifts to do the opposite of what he's created us to do. Right, so we could talk about what's called common grace. Common grace is the idea that all of us, to some extent, experience the grace of God. Right? The fact that your lungs work is a common grace gift of God. Why? Because he sustains all of us. The ability to communicate, for you and I to sit down and talk. It's a common grace gift. You look back at Babel, and what happens is this ability, this common grace gift that God has given to communicate, is used to disobey God. Right? And we all do this. We all take good gifts that God gives, and we twist them, and we warp them. There's example after example after example of how we do this. Look at our culture with sex. A good gift from God, but how often is it used as a means of oppression, a means of abuse, or a means of dehumanizing people? And so we see these things happening where these common grace good gifts are used to twist God's will and to disobey him. And God's response to that is he acts against it. The Tower of Babel, he frustrates their plans to act wickedly. Specifically in this case, this desire for them to make a name for themselves. Like, man, let's make ourselves known so that we don't have to do what God says. It's interesting, you might ask or think, well, why doesn't God really do this anymore? Like, why don't we see things like the Tower of Babel? Could I suggest to you that maybe God does? We just maybe don't notice it? I'll give you an example. How hard has the world worked for world peace? Like, constantly, we're working to have peace. How well is that working out for us? Is it possible that God is frustrating our attempts to achieve something outside of him that was never meant to be achieved outside of him? See, in the text, God acts against the sin of Babel by frustrating their communication. And the result is, even though they didn't want to be, they were still spread over the earth. All right, so in the end,